Trumbull waved a hand impatiently. He said the main benefit of making love to an older woman is that afterward they're so damned grateful. Trumbull leaned closer and lowered his voice. I want Newell and his network on our side. And just which side is that? We've got to get rid of this Indian up there, Waterman. Get rid of him? How? The man's on Mars. I don't want him directing the expedition. Never did want him, as a matter of fact. I just let the rest of you talk me into it. Lawrence took a longer sip of his tall drink. Then, I don't see how. He's too much of a dreamer. Not the proper man to head the expedition at all, Trumbull said. And he doesn't follow orders. He thinks that just because he's out there on Mars, he can do what he wants. Ah, said Lawrence. Do you have specific instances? I mean, the team seems to be following the schedule we all agreed upon, except for this extra excursion to pick up the old Pathfinder equipment. I specifically gave orders that my son was not to be sent out on that trek, Trumbull hissed, his face paling as he tried to keep his voice down. Still, several people at nearby chairs turned toward him with disapproving frowns. Yes, that may be, but there's not much we can do from this distance, is there? Oh, there certainly is, Trumbull said. I want him removed from his position as expedition director. Demoted. Broken. Lawrence sighed. But don't you see, Darrell? That is merely paperwork. He will still be on Mars and still in command there. From all I've learned, the other team members hold him in extremely high regard. He's their hero, really. I want him broken! You'll make a martyr out of him. Trumbull glared at the ICU executive. That's why I asked Newell to join us. I want to make sure that the news media handle this story the way I want them to. Lawrence sank back in his armchair. I think you're stirring up a tempest in a teapot. Well, I don't. It won't make any difference if he's officially expedition director or not. Yes, it will, Trumbull snapped. He wants to go out to find some mythical village he claims he saw on the first expedition. As director, he can set up an excursion whenever he wants. With somebody else as director, he'll never get permission to go. Do you think the new director would refuse to grant him permission for such an excursion? Damned right I do. But they all admire the man so much. Who would deny him the chance to see if his village actually exists? The new director will. Comprehension lit in Lawrence's mind, but he asked the question anyway, even though he knew what Trumbull's answer would be. And who might the new director be? My son Dex, of course. Of course, Lawrence murmured. Of course. In the pit. Rodriguez watched Fuchida slither up and away from him, a dim pool of light that receded slowly but steadily. Through the insulation of his helmet, he could not hear the noise of the biologist's hard suit grating against the ice-rimed rock. He heard nothing but his own breathing, faster than it should have been. Calm down, he ordered himself. Keep calm, and everything will turn out okay. Sure, a sardonic voice in his head answered. Nothing to it. Piece of cake. Then he realized that he was totally, utterly alone in the darkness. It's okay, he told himself. Mitsuo will send the harness down, and then I can winch myself up. The light cast by his helmet lamp was only a feeble glow against the dark, rough rock face. When Rodriguez turned, the light was swallowed by the emptiness of the caldera's abyss, deep and wide and endless. The darkness surrounded him. It was as if there was no one else in the whole universe. No universe at all. Only the all-engulfing darkness of this cold, black pit. Unbidden, a line from some play he had read years earlier in school came to his mind. Why, this is hell, nor am I out of it. Don't be a goon, he snapped at himself. You'll be okay. Your suit's working fine, and Mitsuo's up there by now, taking off the harness and getting ready to send it down to you. Yeah, sure. He could be unconscious. He could be snagged on a rock, or maybe the damned harness broke while the winch was dragging him up the slope. Or the winch pulled loose and he'll come tumbling back down on top of me, winch and all. The image of the two of them knocked off the ledge and plunging into the black, endless pit of hell curdled his blood. No fear, Rodriguez told himself. No fear. He put a gloved hand against the solid rock to steady himself. You'll be out of this soon, he repeated silently. Then he wondered if his lamp's light was weakening. Are the batteries starting to run down? Fuchida's head was banging against the inside of his helmet so hard he tasted blood in his mouth. He squeezed his eyes shut and saw his father's stern, uncompromising glare. How disappointed he will be when he learns that I died on Mars, like Cousin Konoya. And Elizabeth, perhaps it's better this way. She can go back to Ireland and find a man of her own culture to marry. My death will spare her a lifetime of troubles. The winch stopped suddenly, and Fuchida felt a pang of terror. It stuck. He realized at that moment that he was not prepared for death. He did not want to die. Not here on Mars, not at all. A baleful red eye was staring at him. Fuchida thought for a moment he might be slipping into unconsciousness, then slowly realized that it was the light atop one of the geomet beacons they had planted at the lip of the caldera. Straining his eyes in the starlit darkness, he thought he could make out the form of the winch looming above his exhausted body. He reached out and touched it. Yes, he had reached the top, but he felt faint, giddy. His body was soaked with perspiration. Heat prostration, he thought. How funny to die of heat prostration when the temperature outside my suit is nearly 200 degrees below zero. He began to laugh, knowing he was slipping into hysteria and unable to stop himself, until he began coughing uncontrollably. Down on the ledge, Rodriguez tried to keep his own terrors at bay. Mitsuo, he called on a suit-to-suit frequency. You okay? No answer. Of course, dummy. His radio's not working. The cold seemed to be leaching into his suit. Cold enough to freeze carbon dioxide. Cold enough to overpower the suit's heater. Cold enough to kill. It was imagination. He knew you were more likely to broil inside the suit like Mitsuo than freeze. Get up there, Mitzi, he whispered. Get up there in one piece and send the damned tether back down to me. He wouldn't leave me here. Not if he made it to the top. He wouldn't run for the plane and leave me here. He can't run anyway. He can't even walk. But he could make it to the plane once he's up there. Hobble. Jump on one leg. Crawl even. He wouldn't do that. He wouldn't leave me alone to die down here. Something must have happened to him. He must be hurt or unconscious. The memory of his big brother's death came flooding back to him. In a sudden rush, he saw Luis's bloody, mangled body as the rescue workers lifted him out of the wrecked semi. A police chase on the freeway. All those years, his brother had been running drugs up from Tijuana in his 18-wheeler, and Tomas never knew, never even suspected. There was nothing he could do. By the time he saw Luis's rig sprawled along the highway median, it was already too late. He saw himself standing, impotent, inert, as his brother was pronounced dead, and then slid into the waiting ambulance and carried away. Just like that. Death can strike like a lightning bolt. What could I have done to save him? Rodriguez wondered for the thousandth time. I should have done something. But I was too busy being a fly boy, training to be an astronaut. I didn't have time for the family, for my own brother. He took a deep sighing breath of canned air. Well, now it's going to even out. I got all the way to Mars, and now I'm going to die here. Then he heard his brother's soft, musical voice. No fear, muchacho. Never show fear. Not even to yourself. Rodriguez felt no fear. Just a deep sadness that he could not help Luis when his help was needed. And now it was all going to end. All the regrets, all the hopes, everything. For an instant he thought he saw a flash of dim red light against the rock wall. He blinked. Nothing. He looked up, but the top of his helmet cut off his view. Grasping at straws, he told himself. If you want to see something bad enough, you'll see it.